There were some complaints yesterday. I read your responses very carefully. Some complaints that I did not record a special episode of Cut the Clutter coinciding with or marking or commemorating the 75th anniversary of our independence. Yesterday was our Independence Day. Now, on the other hand, we actually sort of shortchanged you by republishing an earlier episode of Cut the Clutter that I had done maybe about 2.5 years ago on what happened in Bangladesh on India's Independence Day, 1975. That is when Sheikh Mujibur Rahman was assassinated. Now, first of all, Bangladesh is in news these days. So we thought that this will be relevant. And second, sometimes I'm also allowed to be a little lazy, particularly when it's a long weekend. But you know what? I wasn't being all lazy. For 20 years now, I haven't driven myself. And I am somebody who drove rented cars from one coast to the US to the other, and I've driven all across India and overseas. And 20 years back, I gave up driving. So I thought that this Independence Day, I should resume driving. So traffic was a bit less in the city. So I got in the car by myself, not with anybody to help me or do any backseat driving with me, and drove around for quite some time. So for me, that was my little bit of hard work. Also, my freedom on Independence Day. So I apologize to you for not recording a special episode on Independence Day. But you know, I relearned to drive all by myself. Now, having got that out of the way, let me talk about something more reflective on coinciding with 75 years of independence. And the idea of this comes from one of my genius friends. I'm fortunate to have a friend like him, Ruchir Sharma. Now, Ruchir Sharma, who I'm sure many of you, most of you are familiar with, he's a global investment guru. He also writes wonderful books. He figures out countries in a very serious way, countries, markets, and he looks at the markets through countries and their economy and their politics. So you can see a bunch of his books displayed on my screen, and you can go to his website, just straightforward, ruchirsharma.com, you will find it there. Now, he's a columnist now with Financial Times. His column on India's Independence Day, that is on 75 years, on the completion of 75 years of India as an independent nation, was quite perceptive and quite provocative as usual. So what are the two or three highlights? I'll mention those to you. Then he has a lot of data. I will not go into a lot of that data. In fact, if you want to see more of that, check out. It's been on NDTV. If you've missed it, you can check it out on NDTV's website. There are great graphics there. Now, much as we'd like to, we can't borrow or steal them. So we are doing the right thing. The right thing is I'm sharing with you a link of that entire conversation between Ruchir Sharma and Pranoy Roy on NDTV's website. And you can watch it there. It's an hour long, I think an hour plus long conversation. Watch it for the quality of the conversation, but also for the graphics. I would, however, list for you three or four of the most important points he makes and give you from those my understanding of the way India's politics and democracy has moved over the past 75 years. Because I don't understand economics or markets, but I'd like to believe that even if I don't understand politics, at least I'm a reasonably old student of Indian politics now. And sometimes political data informs your understanding of the political economy or economics, and sometimes economic data informs your understanding of politics. So you might also see a few dollops of opinion, if not dollops, maybe a little bit of garnish of opinion here and there, and you will figure out when it comes in, or maybe I will qualify it. So what is the more important things, most important things he says? First of all, his most striking point is that India at 75, independent India at 75, is no richer than the rest of the world than it was 75 years ago. Now that takes some understanding. You will say, oh, so what about the fact that we have progressed so much in 75 years? We are still no richer than before. So his exact data point here is that when India became independent, India at that point was the sixth largest economy in the world. Sixth. six, like this, Che. Sixth largest economy in the world. Again, since his data, his analysis stops at 2020, in 2000, India had back to being the sixth largest economy in the world. So, you worked 75 years to stay in the same place. There is a twist there which I will come to. Similarly, if you look at India's per capita income, India's per capita income, it's a stunning fact. India's per capita income, Ruchir says, was 18% of the global average. So globally, if a human being was, say, earning 6,000 rupees in a year, the Indian was earning 18% of that, a little less than one-fifth of that, right? 75 years later, you are exactly at the same point. India's per capita income is 18% of the global average. Once again, you might say, you ran so hard for 75 years, you're in the same place, so why all this celebration? Again, there is a twist there. Now, the twist you have to understand. India, in fact, did not stay in the same place because India may have grown. India is growing. This is not to say that India is not growing, India has not progressed. India has progressed tremendously from 75 years ago. But the fact is, so has the world. It's not as if when we were growing, the rest of the world was stationary. The rest of the world was growing too. And there were many decades, in fact, at least six decades since then, when most of the rest of the world, at least the world that really matters, the economies that really matter, say in the top 20, 25, 30, they were growing faster than India. So what Ruchir says is that India has followed a V-shaped graph. So India was, say, sixth, it came down to 13, 12, 13, 12, 13, you will see in the decades of 1980s, 90s, and also when the decade of the 2000 began, India was at about 12th or 13th. That was the bottom. That was the bottom of the V. And then it began picking up. Now, it's not as if the rest of the world was still stationary. The rest of the world was also growing. But 1990, India reformed its economy. It took some time. After 1990, we saw a bit of political instability. We saw a few war-like situations. With Pakistan in particular, there was Kargil in 1999. There were the sanctions in 1998 after the nuclear test. So those in a way wiped out the gains of the 1991 economic reform. And then 2001-2, there was again a warlike situation with Pakistan, which lasted a couple of years, Op Parakram. After that, India really picked up. So from the bottom of the V, India then began picking up. And by 2020, it had come to number six again. So it began at number six, you came to number six. Exactly the same thing happened with India's per capita incomes. It started with 18% of the world average. It came down. It kept falling, 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 falling. And the truth is, if you look at the data, by about 1990-91, India's per capita income, hold your breath, was 6% of global average. So that was the bottom of the V there, 18% to 6%. Where are we now? Back to 18%. So once again, all this while the world was growing, we were also growing, but we were growing only at about 3%. That is something that was infamously called the Hindu rate of growth. You can call it anything. Pranay Roy says Indian socialist rate of growth. I would say, why give socialism a bad name? This was the Indian cynical, populist rate of growth. Because what India had for 30 years, 40 years in the name of socialism was a complete sham. India never was a socialist country. It is just a slogan that politicians of the day, particularly Mrs. Gandhi, Indira Gandhi, used to consolidate their power. And basically, we were fooled for decades in the name of socialism. In fact, there is an article of which I'll share a link with you by T.N. Nainan, and he wrote it some time back, a few years back, for Business Standard, in which he said that, and he analyzed it, how the five-year period, quinquennium, I think it's called, the five-year period between 1969 and 74 was the most damaging, the most destructive period in India's economy. Because that is when Mrs. Gandhi unleashed her completely cynical destruction of Indian private sector and Indian economy in the name of socialism. Of course, she was surrounded by these extreme leftists around her, P.N. Huxer, D.P. Dhar, etc., etc. But that is the time India nationalized banks, it nationalized general insurance, it nationalized its petroleum and oil companies, which they are trying to privatize now and still struggling, you know. They said they will privatize BPCL, but they are still stuck. This is when she nationalized whatever was left of coal mining. This is when she also nationalized, and that is one thing where she stepped back, she also nationalized grain trade, because her advisor said, if this can happen to our ideological mother country, ideological mother meaning Soviet Union, why can't it be done in India? So she tried doing that, and then immediately there was such a blowback that she pulled back. But the fact is that as a result of all that, not only did India's economic growth stall quite heavily, India's inflation rate at one point towards the end of 1974 went to 33%. 33%, 3 and 3, right? Today it's 7% and it hurts us so much. So in India, a lot of these atrocities were committed in the name of socialism. So while people might be offended because economist Raj Krishna had called it maybe lightheartedly the Hindu rate of growth, I'd also say that if you were a real socialist, which I am not, if you were a real socialist, you would also be hurt if this was called the socialist rate of growth. This was the Congress Party fake left rate of growth. So India was growing, averaging at 2.5-3%. Remember, in 1960, the total fertility rate of an Indian woman, that is the number of babies a woman produces in her fertile age, right, which could be from any time since a woman attains puberty to as long as she remains reproductive, that was 5-6 babies, 5-6 babies. Today, it's 1.8, 1.9. So India's population was also growing very fast. So even if your economy grew by 2.5-3%, your population was also growing by 2.5%, if not 3% or thereabouts. So your per capita income was not rising. And that is why, say, by 1990 or so, our per capita incomes had become 6% of the global average. That was one third of where we were at the time of independence. So you see how we blew our own advantages. We had started like this. This is like starting a big marathon race in a city, right? Boston Marathon, London Marathon, Delhi Marathon, Mumbai Marathon. And you will see this 5,000, 10,000, anybody goes, puts on a chest plate. Even I did once when Rajiv Gandhi had I Run For My Nation, I think in 1988 or 89 or thereabouts. I ran 10 kilometers only. I can't run a marathon. Even at my best, I could not run a marathon, but I ran 10 kilometers. So then you see that after a while, the front runners are in front. Those are the serious runners. And then different packs come into being. And some people in front then start falling off. They start falling off, and after a while, you forget them. It's like India started in the front pack of about 18 to 30. In fact, front pack of 6 when it comes to overall GDP, and then fell back and back and back. And then from 1990 onwards, it's been trying to make up. Now you can try to make up, but the others are also running. They have not gone to a standstill. And that's why competition now is much tougher. So the question is, where does India go from here? Once again, an example to understand what happens when one country grows, but the other country grows even faster. 1990, Ruchir also explains this, it's a well-known fact. Say around 1988, 1989, around time China began to change under Deng Xiaoping's influence. That is when China also hosted Rajiv Gandhi. He went there, and Deng Xiaoping also said the time had come for India and China to put the border issue behind them and move on with their relationship in other areas, including trade and other cooperation. And that's how it gone on until Xi Jinping came and changed the script. Nevertheless, at that point, India and China were about peers. They were about equals in terms of their wealth or poverty, depending on how you want to see it. And then what happened? Since 1990, you might say, or 1991, India reformed, right? So India also grew. India also grew, but what did Chinese do? They did much more reform than us. They actually either shut down their public sector or they modernized it. They laid off a lot of people, crores of people, which would never happen in India. And they waited for them to be absorbed by the private sector. They opened up FDI fully. In the process, they began growing much faster than India. You might say that, look, if India averaged growth at, say, 6%, 5.5%, 6%, 7% after that, if you say five times, China wasn't growing at 35% per year. That's true, they weren't. But remember the power of compounding. So if you are growing, say, at 6% per year on an average, and China is growing at 10-12% per year on an average, then you can see what compounding does to you. You understand? Simple interest and compounding interest. That's what happened between China and us. So in those 30 years, India has increased its GDP. We have increased our GDP 10x. That is 10 times. So we've now come to about $3.1, $3.2 trillion. We suffered a bit in that pandemic year. Now we are making up. So I'd say about $3.2 trillion. But this has gone up 10 times. Our per capita income also, say 2020 was about 2200. Current figure is about 1980. That's because we had that very bad pandemic year. And even though we had growth afterwards, the truth is that even if we grow at 7.5% this year, which seems unlikely at this point because of all the international factors, maybe it's about 7%. We will barely reach the level of per capita income that we had in 2019. Because remember, between 2019 and 2022, although our population growth rate has gone down, but we would have still added about 3 crore more people. So that gets averaged out. So our per capita income will still reach where it was, say, in about 2019 at the end of this year. Nevertheless, if we take it at the 2020 figure, which is $2,200, that had risen 5x since 1990. Now, what you might say, fantastic, but see what had happened to China meanwhile. China meanwhile, while India grew 10 times to 3.2 trillion, China grew to 16 trillion. That is 5 times as much as India. Once again, it is the power of compounding. It's as if India put their money on a compounded interest, say, of 6% per year, and China put it at 10% per year. See what happens. And that's how the Chinese economy became 5 times bigger than us. China's per capita income also, average income also became 5 times higher than India's. That is nearly $10,000 per capita. And that's where the big difference between us came in. Now, there are other political elements that you can see with this data. I told you that the really bad decades for India were the 60s and the 70s. 80s, we began to change a little bit. When Mrs. Gandhi came back after the emergency, she had figured that she had really messed up on the economy. So a little bit of opening up started from 1980 onwards. Big reform came in 91, but some change had started then also. And you can see some changes. For example, if you check out the data carefully, go to the IMF website or World Bank website, you will see between 1985 and 1989, India's per capita incomes grew a little bit better. Those were the Rajiv Gandhi years. But a lot of that growth was also based on borrowed money. And that then led to the balance of payments crisis of 1990-91, which led to that IMF bailout, which is India's last IMF bailout. Now, if we update these rankings, in 2020, India was number 6 in the world as the total GDP. In terms of the total GDP, at this point, India is the 5th. What has happened in the process is India has left UK behind. So if you go back, India's worst rankings, say, of 12, 13. So if you look at the countries that were ahead of India, when India was at its bottom, at number 13, which could be in 1980 or 2000. 1980, the countries ahead of India were US, Japan, Germany, France, UK, Italy, Canada, Brazil, Spain, and Mexico. China wasn't there. come to 2000, China had got there. So once again, the countries ahead of India were US, Japan, Germany, UK, France, China. China at number 5, right? China is at number 2 now. US, Japan, Germany, UK, France, China, Italy, Canada, Mexico, Brazil. Now India has left Mexico, Brazil, Canada, Italy, France and UK behind. That's why India is number 5 behind US, China, Japan, Germany and then India. And so we tend to be very self-congratulatory and we say, oh, nominal GDP, we are now number 5. Purchasing power parity, maybe we'll soon be number 3 if we are not at number 3 already. But you know what happens? We Indians have a big weakness. And that weakness is declaring victory too soon. And that's why reality checks are needed all the time. And I know that reality checks can be rude, but the truth must be told. Because unless we face the truth, we get into this self-congratulatory spiral and we declare victory and we say jhanda uncha rahe hamara and we've defeated the world. We haven't defeated the world. We have a very long way to go. Because we have to understand, as I keep saying all the time, we have to understand the difference between absolutes, percentages and averages. Now look at Brazil today. Brazil is number 8 behind India, right? Number 8. India is at number 5, Brazil is at number 8. But India's per capita income is about $2,000 today. In fact, the latest figures is 1980, but I'd say 2000 because now it's getting better. So $2,000 today for ease of calculation also. Brazil is $10,000. So average Brazilian is 5 times richer than India. So just because we have the numbers of population and all of them lead to a big aggregate, it does not mean that India is today richer than Brazil. Average Brazilian is 5x richer than India. UK is today 6th. UK is behind India, but the population of UK is just 6.7 crores. At 6.7 crore population, UK's per capita income is $40,000 compared to India's 2000. So UK average British citizen is 20 times richer than India. So there's a long way to go for India. This is not to make us feel bad. This is just to hold up the mirror so we see the reality. So I see a lot of dangerous self-congratulation. Arre, pehle angrezon ne hamari par raj kiya, ab hum un par raj kar rahe hain. The British ruled over us for all this while. Now we are ruling over them. It doesn't work like that. Just because you eat any particular brand of pan masala, it doesn't mean you start ruling the British. They are still 20 times richer than you on a per capita basis. France, again, number 7. So India is 5, UK is 6, France number 7. Per capita income, $40,000, 20 times richer than India. Italy at number 9. I told you Brazil is at number 8. Italy at number 9. This is total GDP. Again, a much smaller population. Per capita income of $32,000. Canada at number 10. Canada used to be way ahead of us. It's at number 10 and we'll say fantastic, man number 5, Canada number 10. But remember, Canada's per capita income is $45,000. So any which way you look at it, India has a very long way to go. And that's why overall average terms, we've still gotten back to where we were 75 years ago, because we are catching up with the rest of the world. We've been left behind in the field. Now we are running faster than the rest. So we are leaving one runner behind every now and then, but only if we keep running at that speed. So the central conclusion that Ruchir has, in fact, I disagree with. And disagree with it not because I question the basis of it or the data behind it. All of that looks quite sound to me, but out of wishful thinking as well, because I don't want to believe it, because I do believe in terms of my own understanding of India's politics and India's society, that this Indian society, this large population with huge, huge areas of poverty, with the per capita income of just $2,000, which is 1/5 of China's and about 1/5 of Brazil's, if it grows at anything less than 7% per year on an average, it will be very destabilizing socially and politically. And we don't want that happening in India. And that's why the leaders of India
have to focus on growth.
Now you know why I had said that you will see a few dollops of opinion in this episode of Cut the Clutter. But if you really want to see the data and the facts and the arguments, please go and watch that discussion between Pranoy and Ruchir on NDTV's website.